Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
I thought you were reaching for the mic there, Aaron, to just blurt out, welcome everybody, but indeed, welcome everybody. My name is Patrick Martins. This is a pre-Christmas edition of the main course. We are broadcasting just 2 days before Christmas live out of Roberta's Restaurant. This is going to be the last show on the network until the new year. Is that right?
That's right.
So that's pretty exciting. And we wanted to come up with a great theme for this show and an important theme. And we thought of the idea of giving as a theme. And it's a very rich theme that goes, can go a lot of ways. I mean, our sponsor, Hearst Ranch, helped us give the studio. I gave up my chair, my host chair, to my wife, Ann Saxelby, who's in studio with us.
Thank you.
My sperm to Anne and had a baby, Max, who's
in
studio.
I knew you were
going to
go there. Yep, that's
well, no,
so
I'm going around the room.
I was surprised it took so long, actually.
For it to say something vulgar. We are being given talent by Jack Inslee, who's in studio.
Well, you gave me Fernet, so that works.
Okay, very nice, which was given to me by the Roberta's bartender. And we have in studio with us, like I say, that's Anne's in studio. Max Martins is in studio, the executive director of the Heritage Radio Network and host of the Farm Report. Aaron Fairbanks is here.
Hello, thank you.
And our honored guest is Tony Butler, the executive director of Bread and Life, the largest food bank in all Brooklyn.
Correct.
So thank you so much for coming in.
That's my pleasure.
Well, you just had a big giving day, Anthony, yesterday, didn't you?
We did.
And I was there. Tell us about how that worked out and tell our listeners what exactly happened.
Every year at this time, apropos of the giving, we distribute annually 2,000 or toys to 2,000 families and 2,000 meals to 2,000 families. And what we've done the last several years is most of that stuff is New York State produced and locally sourced. Yesterday we gave out approximately 600 hams from, remind me the farm?
It is Lazy Farm, the only significant raiser of the red wattle pig, which is an endangered variety of livestock. So your clients actually were helping save that breed by eating those hams.
We were, and those all came through Heritage Foods, partnering Patrick that started last year, right?
Yeah.
We started doing this. And it's all part of our, talk of giving. And this year, on top of that, top of the meals for 2,000 families, we gave out an extra 1,000 meals to families out in Far Rockaway who were devastated by the by Hurricane Sandy. But we were having a slight chat before on the notion of giving, and it's a circular notion. It's a circular notion that Bread and Life lives and is able to serve so many people. Over this year, we'll do almost 750,000 meals because people give to us. People donate to us. We're 91% privately funded.
Wow.
How big an organization, just in terms of millions of dollars?
We're about a $3 million organization.
Okay.
And we provide those meals. We provide services for about 23,000-24,000 folks, and we'll provide various services for. And that's done through people giving. And part of, I feel, our obligation as part of the community is to use that money as wisely and in the best sense of stewardship as I can. And to do that, one of the examples is buying, say, through Heritage Food, to buy these local mm-hmm. foods. We're going to drop on produce this year probably about $200,000 that we source through local farms in upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
That also drives, as I mentioned, we're 91% privately funded, but the other 9% is government funded, which is primarily from the state, then from the city. And that state money, I've made a promise to push as much of that money back into locally sourced food.
And, you know, local businesses like my own, I mean, I cannot tell you, A, how much we need that, and B, how generous it is that you support a local business, and the form of community that that espouses is then we try to work with 30 for 30 or your programs, right, and to certainly promote your mission here. We've signed a memorandum of understanding between our two nonprofit organizations. So, no, it is very important. Now, you, of course, have the added challenge of giving year-round,
right,
food, and yet people have it in their head to only give either when there's an emergency or during Christmas.
Right.
So is that a challenge for you to raise year-round?
It is always a challenge. I mean, it's the time between Thanksgiving and Christmas is the traditional time people kind of remember to give, particularly at a higher level. And this year, with the tragedies of Hurricane Sandy, which happened on Halloween, right in the almost in the middle of that period, that has, in some ways, enhanced giving. But I think people need to know that our obligation, you know, particularly around this time of Christmas, our obligation to our neighbor is the other 364 days, not just Christmas. It's those other days when we have an obligation, particularly us who have been given more, to do something with that we've been given. And I think it needs to be done in a very sane, very rational, very kind of investment model that you see the money's being used as best as it can. But it's not just a sense to make one feel good. It's a sense to make the community better.
Mm-hmm. Now, why do we only give at Christmas? Is it a biblical thing?
I think it does come out of the Christian tradition of, I mean, it's a notion of giving gifts. Like it comes from the Magi giving gifts to Jesus on his birthday. And then we've had the popular culture, the notion of Santa Claus. You know, one of the most popular books, The Christmas Carol, which mm-hmm. talks about the kind of redemption through giving. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Dickens story talks about that. And so I think, and I'm not disparaging, it's a very good thing to give. It's a very good thing to think about other people and think what they would like and put one outside of oneself. But the trick here, not the trick, but the thing is to take that seed, if we use a farming metaphor, and allow it to grow the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, I mean, just before we go to the Bible, because I want to follow that theme and ask Erin, I know she's pulled up a couple of interesting quotes from the Bible. Do you have a policy in place that says we are going to take X amount of dollars from your credit card four times a year? Or, I mean, what do you ask? How do you do in July?
I do. We do asks five other times a year through okay. mailings and like that. We encourage people to do, just as you said, to sign up for an automatic credit card gift, mm-hmm. The capacity to do that so you know it's giving. We do appeals. We do different events. We remind people that particularly the notion of hunger, where one in five New Yorkers uses emergency food.
One in five, unbelievable.
That's the size of Philadelphia. It's about 1.8 million. So mm-hmm. that's like if all of Philadelphia had to live on a soup kitchen. Mm-hmm. Just to give folks the magnitude of the hunger issue in a country that has more food than we know what to do with. Mm-hmm. And so to keep that in front of people's mind and provide that opportunity that they can get outside themselves mm-hmm. and assist their neighbor.
Well, talking about this Christmas thing and why it's so funny that the entire country, even though we come from so many denominations and countries, the Bible has a great pull on us, certainly as it relates to giving. So, Erin, what have you pulled up on this theme?
Well, I've pulled a few different quotes that kind of touch on some interesting stuff. And the first one I'm going to share with you basically talks about the amount of giving and the kind of the amount of your gift. And it's from Luke 21, verses 1 through 4. Jesus looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the offering box. And he saw a poor widow put in two small copper coins. And he said, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all of them. For all they have contributed out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty put in all she had to live on." I thought that was just kind of a really interesting way to parse it. It's not kind of the amount of your give, but how does that amount relate to what you have to give?
It's what is significant, right? What is significant
to
you?
It is. It's what's, 'cause it has to be giving. Mm-hmm. It can't just be your surplus. That's what that traditional, it's called the widow's mite. And that's what it points to, that we give, because we don't give out of what we have, not what we don't need, but what we have, then I don't think we're making any kind of change in any investment.
We're just doing the stuff where we could care less if it's sitting on our shelf or not. Mm-hmm. But when we give out of our need and out of, so we have to make some sacrifice. The widow, that scriptural quote of the widow's mite, she had to give something, which meant she didn't have something else. Mm-hmm. She would have spent that on.
Well, so I'm curious, you know, because one of the other reasons that the end of the year is often a big time for giving is as people look towards, you know, nonprofit organizations mm-hmm. where there's a tax benefit yes. to giving and there is, you know, how does that benefit kind of play into the decision of, like, the timing of giving? And how does that, I mean, change the, I don't know, the value or the intention of the yeah. gift? If you're giving for a tax benefit, I mean, still you can use the money in the organization. Right. But
I still think it's a good thing. I mean, it's part of our social structure that some way says or does say that nonprofits are better stewards of the money. So that's why, I mean, you could have... Where Europe doesn't say have these huge deductions, but they have an incredibly more robust kind of government-sponsored social network. As Americans, we've never quite trusted that. That's the whole fiscal cliff argument that's going on now. And for whatever reason, it ends up at the end of the year, historically. So, and I have people who give significant gifts for their tax writer that are out of what they need. And that's just part of... kind of our social contract. That's part of one of the things we've done in this country to encourage people to give. And even in an ideal way, that reduces the government revenue. So it is a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Of all parties.
Yeah.
Is the 501c3 a true and premature for giving your money to the right cause? I mean...
From the IRS standpoint, yes.
Yes, of course.
It's. I think people should do more research than that, just on a nonprofit. Sadly, you see, whenever we have a tragedy, say up in Newtown or with Sandy, there's a lot of kind of not too reputable charities that can come out. So people should definitely do their research, look on an agency's website, which should have all their financials. Agencies are required to have mm-hmm. their financials so you can see how they spend their monies, things like that, what the salary structures are, and what their percentage. One of the biggest things is an agency should have a percentage of fundraising that's under 25% of their total operating costs. Anything over that should make someone somewhat wary.
So are you saying 75% of the money I give go to the actual cause right. and not to operating the
right.
nonprofit?
It should. Yeah, that's kind of the tipping point, if you will. Yeah, most run, a good nonprofit will probably run a bit under that, probably run 18 or 17%.
What's Bread and Life?
We're running about 16% right now.
Yeah. Is that a board mandate to try to get that number down?
No, not really. I think it's my mandate.
What is your goal?
My goal, to run an efficient agency. It's efficient to get most of the money to what we say we're going to do, with the reality that I have salaries to pay, I have insurance to pay, I've got heat and light to pay, and hams to buy.
Well, any other biblical quotes? Because, the Bible basically says 10%, right?
Right. Well, that's the...
That is like the tithing, and I think that's... that's something that I grew up with, is you always give 10% of your income. Mm-hmm. And actually, the other quote I pulled wasn't on the tithing, but this idea of the intention behind your giving. And this is from Matthew 6, verses 1 through 4. Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly, I say to you, they have not received their reward. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you.
And let's cancel that plan to give this check to Anthony Butler right now on air, because after that one, it seems like... No, just kidding. But wow, so that's about doing it for the right reasons.
Right.
I mean, there's a moral thing. I mean, yeah. I think people do want credit for it.
Well, people should have credit. I think it's the notion of...
Doing it for the wrong reasons.
The wrong reasons.
But you don't care. I mean,
no,
money
I can
is
use
money.
I can use the money, though. It's funny. It reminds me, I have a very wealthy donor. Who I threaten every once in a while. I told him, if you don't give me enough money, I'm going to put your name on the building.
Because he wants anonymous.
He's a very humble man, and but made a significant amount of money in private equity. And
He wants to be anonymous. Yeah. It's funny, I always see Carnegie Hall or, you know, these arts thing. There's always four anonymouses at the end.
But to me, I think, you know, that's like one of those things that, you know, giving anonymously is something that I always found very confusing when I was younger, because shouldn't your act of giving be an act of kind of leadership and yes. intention and a show of support? And, you know, I definitely understand from the passage here that, you know, you don't want to be out in the street like, I'm such a wonderful person, I gave, and right. have you given? And but you do, I think, by taking a stand and making a donation towards something, you are kind of saying, I support the work of this organization. And I think you're also saying other people maybe should too.
It's very important. I'm sorry I forgot, but when you read your sponsor, to have a good sponsor which is supporting you, mm-hmm. That's one. Also, we won't get into too much biblical study, but you have to be careful when you're reading scripture that it comes out of a Hebraic tradition of exaggeration. Mm. Jesus exaggerated everything. You know, the whole notion of a rich man can't pass through the eye of a needle, all those different quotes that are confusing, because that's how a rabbi would have talked in those. So Patrick hit it right on the head that it's for the right reasons. It is very much leadership that, you know, you've got sponsors or farms or benefactors that say, look, I did it, and you've got resources too. You need to do it. That's what it's talking about, as opposed to being for the person.
Hmm. Well, I just want to share a little story. A couple Christmases ago, my father, I'm the oldest of six, gave us each $50 to give to the charity of our choice. So it's interesting, like, he gave to us that we might give to others. And, you know, not at the time I was kind of cooking in the city, I had really no money, but I felt like this incredible kind of pressure to choose the right place to give my money. And I really like went back and forth, and it was just kind of this strange experience for me. I'm like, wow, if you have a lot of money and you have to give, or, you know, you make a decision to give, how do you kind of choose what the right organization is to give to? And I ended up donating, I split it into to the, you know,
pay for your trip to Fiji fund. is that what got the nod?
No, I split between Transportation Alternatives and you know, National Public Radio, which were two organizations that I really love the work they're doing, and they enhance my life in a multitude of ways.
Radio, and also increased transportation, because you lived in the middle of nowhere in the northern reaches of Michigan. You're like, we need more train service up here. So one was personal, one was... that's awesome. Well, that's good. And you felt good about giving to those?
I felt really good, but it also really engendered this kind of amazing conversation between my siblings. As
isn't that
like
powerful?
Kind of who chose to give to what, and the level of kind of, you know, research or intention that people put in, and what ended up being kind of significant causes to them. You know, one brother just kind of literally gave $50 to a homeless guy on the street. You know, another sister of mine donated to a church that she was affiliated with. So it was
very funny that you mentioned that, because one of my favorite shows on all television, God, it is so unique and great, always, is the CBS Sunday Morning. I really love that show. And they had a story today about Secret Santa. Yeah. So they didn't show his face, but basically he does almost the opposite of that scripture. He just goes around and gives everyone $100. Yeah. And he's a Missouri businessman, and he gives out a few $100,000 a year. And so, of course, everyone's like, oh, my God, thank you. So he was in Long Island recently, and people are just hugging him. But that's an interesting way of giving. But I wonder if that's almost the opposite of the 501c3.
It is, but obviously it's a very personal private donation, but I think what we're talking about here is that the giving's got to reflect or enhance your values and your worldview. Mm-hmm. It can't be about, or it shouldn't be primarily about making one feel better about oneself. It should be that, as Aaron was talking with the family, you know, and they're discussing what's important to them, one giving to church, one giving to a homeless person, one giving to NPR and a transportation alternative, that it's enhancing something that you believe in and think is valuable in society and needs. Mm-hmm. And this gentleman believes that acts of goodness need to be celebrated. Mm-hmm. Just those simple acts of good charity need to be celebrated. So he does it in a kind of goofy way, dressing up as Santa. I don't mean to disparage. It's a very wonderful thing, because it's not about him. You know, he's maintained his anonymity forever.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. Well, let's get another perspective, because I do really want to break it down also for our listeners. You know, I really want to say, what if you're making $30,000? What if you're making $50,000? How much should you be giving? So, but let's contextualize that with the Bill Clinton clip. He wrote a book, I think, called Giving or something. I forget.
What is the name of it? Yeah.
But it was a book really about what one should give and charity. Jack, do you have the name of that book?
This is actually a clip from his post-Thanksgiving 2000 radio address that I thought was apropos.
This is his radio recording.
Let's hear
it. Good morning. All across America, friends and families are still savoring the joys and the leftovers of a bountiful Thanksgiving. This weekend also marks the traditional start of the holiday shopping season. But even as many of us head out to buy that perfect gift for those we love, millions of Americans are also extending their generosity to people they've never met. Overall, 70% of America's households made charitable contributions last year, even those who didn't have much extra to spare. In fact, half of all Americans with incomes of less than $10,000 made a charitable contribution. And as a percentage of their net wealth, families with the lowest income gave much more than the wealthier. That's both humbling and inspiring, and suggests a tremendous potential for growth in charitable giving by well-to-do Americans. This new report also reveals that people over the age of 65 are much more likely to make charitable contributions than younger people, even after accounting for differences in income and wealth. Perhaps having earned the wisdom of a lifetime, seniors understand that the satisfaction of charitable giving cannot be measured in dollars and cents. And they know that personal generosity is an essential ingredient in the mortar that binds our entire community together. Given this truth, how can we do a better job of engaging younger Americans in giving? We know already that they care about their communities because so many are volunteering for local causes. Nearly 150,000 of them have joined AmeriCorps over the past 8 years, dedicating at least a year of their lives to public service. According to one recent study, this youthful spirit of community can be translated into a lifetime of financial support for worthy causes. With that in mind, we need to help younger people recognize their own capacity to do good and help them discover the rewards of generosity. In this time of prosperity and season of sharing, let's remember when we give what we can and give it with joy, we don't just renew the American tradition of giving, we also renew ourselves. Thanks for listening.
He was so good. What do you think? What has struck you about that?
Two things. The kind of disparity in giving that people with less tend to give more.
Interesting. So he said people with under incomes of $10,000, 50% of them gave.
And then for folks, I think it's roughly like $50,000 or less, give more proportion of their net wealth than people who are millionaires. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very... And I thought the other thing was, and I found this very encouraging among, I can say this now, young folks. It always sounds funny when I say it, but you know, you can... that the involvement... my daughter's going to college. I remember her calling me during the debates, and they were in the kind of common lounge, and I could hear the arguments going back because half were like Romney supporters and half were Obama supporters. But it was, she said, Dad, it was amazing that the people were having serious arguments. They were knew what was going on. They were invested in their kind of worldview, whatever it may be, and they were trying to operationalize it. And so I think that's a great, very hopeful thing now. And it's what former President Clinton, I think, was alluding to, that it is a hopeful time. We need to motivate people. We need to kind of plant that charitable seed in young folks, particularly as they grow and kind of get more wealth and more means. The other thing I was chuckling at, third thing, was that talks about folks over 65, and someone told me that mortality is a wonderful motivator towards charity. That you start thinking about what's important.
Yeah, and will I get into heaven?
Yeah.
Aaron, anything strike you about? I mean, time is a big thing. I mean, you as a person who runs a nonprofit organization benefit from people not giving you money, but giving you time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, giving you time. I think there is something to me that's always been amazing about giving someone like the gift of followership, essentially. Mm-hmm. They're going to come and work for you and follow kind of the path that you're laying down for your organization or for your business. And in particular, I know for the Heritage Radio Network, we have a small group of interns that will hopefully be growing in the new year. But I'm always so kind of amazed by their generosity. One of the women who, Leah Eden, who's been working with us for the last few months, you know, asked me before we went on break here if she could come in an extra day a week during the month of January because she's going to be off of school. And she's like, I'd really, you know, there's so much to be done here and I want to contribute as much as I can while I have extra time. And it was just, you know, so touching and humbling and really, I think, motivates me to make the organization as strong and as organized as I can.
And to work 6 days a week.
And
No, but that's very interesting. Well, I mean, just to break it down real simple. So someone, I pose this to both of you, but Tony especially. I mean, so someone makes $40,000 to $50,000 a year. What should they give? $10,000?
After tax, probably. I think one needs to factor in taxes, you know. But,
which is a form of giving, right?
Well, it is, but it's kind of a mandate. I mean, we should pay taxes. Grown-ups should pay taxes.
When taxes go up, do donations go down? Or is that too hard?
It doesn't seem to.
Okay.
And taxes, not to get too far afield, but are a weird thing because we focus on federal taxes. But really, the big nut of our taxes are local and state. Mm-hmm. And they, if the feds reduce something, and then the state has to increase it because you still have to keep the roads and things like that. But so I don't know that. But I think after taxes, people should look at whatever their kind of take-home income is. Let's say it's a $40,000, so a person's paying, bringing home, let's do a rough math, bring home about $30,000. Maybe they need to look at $3,000 over the course of their charities between their, you know, it's a, their church envelopes or the regular churchgoers, it's online donations.
Personal, it could be a homeless guy on the street that you give $100
to. Could be buying tickets to some event that you, of an organization you like. But yeah, I think we need to look at that. We need to look at that and look at it closely and can't emphasize too much. Folks really need to know where their money's going. Mm-hmm. And know that it's being spent. Doesn't mean they micromanage it. You don't invest in an agency and then tell them how to spend every penny. But you have to kind of trust how they've spent every penny previously and invest in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that was like one of the things that we ran into a lot when we were doing Sandy coverage mm-hmm. on the radio network is there was a lot of organizations that had a real focus on donating their money to the Red Cross and others that were looking at more grassroots-based organizations like the Red Hook Initiative. Mm-hmm. And then when it came time for us to look at doing a fundraiser, you know, we wanted to lend our support to folks in the Rockaways because mm-hmm. here at the radio and through Roberta's, that's kind of the mm-hmm. community we have right. the strongest ties with. And when we kind of sat down and really thought about it, I kind of identified small businesses mm-hmm. as the group that probably was getting shorted most.
I was just about to ask that. That's so funny you said that.
So you know, we raised almost $16,000 that's going to be going towards small business development and business revitalization in the Rockaway area.
So that could be a laundromat or a deli or a restaurant.
All those
right?
people who can't open, basically, they've lost their income and are incredibly important to a local community.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But that's not considered a charity per se. I mean, that's that 501c3.
Right.
The local laundromat is just as important to the fabric of a community and yet wouldn't traditionally receive.
Right. But when these physical evils happen of hurricanes and tornadoes and whatnot, that it's back to our original thing, that it's to make the community better. And the community is composed of many pieces.
Yeah, and I think having a really diverse safety net is the other kind of big lesson that came away from that, because the Red Cross is a global organization that was able to mobilize and provide particular types of resources. You know, mm-hmm. St. John's Bread and Life similarly was able to kind of get a truck out there.
They were moving on Halloween,
right away. So I think there's not that one is necessary. To me, I guess it's not that one is necessarily better than the other, but we need them all. We need mm-hmm. kind of resources and response that happens across all levels to ensure that nobody, you know, individual, business, whatever, is kind of slipping.
Shut down.
Slipping through the cracks.
A deathly blow.
I was speaking with Speaker Quinn on Thanksgiving, and we were talking about, and somehow got talking about the difference between Sandy and Katrina. And she said one of the differences was that New York City had both its local city infrastructure, which is police and emergency folks, who are quite competent at dealing with this, and have very strong nonprofit sector, which she thought that was the difference between Louisiana, because Louisiana had to wait for FEMA and the Red Cross, which are not nimble by their very nature. They're not nimble organizations. They're big, powerful, but they're and they didn't have. I mean, one of the great things was the whole Occupy Sandy group, who figured out how to target resources, so you didn't have 300 people here and one person here to target resources, and that was a very powerful thing in this city.
Well, Anne mentioned that to me. You know how interesting it was in New York. You know that all these, you know, and the stars and the concerts, and right away, you know, as if it had happened maybe a horrible a group of tornadoes in Kansas, yeah, you might not get that. But I do want to say one thing about stars and athletes. I mean, I, having lived abroad in France and Italy, it is unbelievable how important it is for athletes and movie stars to put their name to good causes.
Oh, it is.
And I think they do a tremendous job, and people forget that, you know, they tactically pulled together faster than FEMA in a way.
I know.
And get all these disparate for schedules.
For St. John's Bread and Life, it was so useful and so powerful to have Jimmy Fallon do a shout-out to us on the 12-12-12 concert. I almost fell off my couch.
I heard that. I almost fell off mine. I emailed you 2 seconds later.
And my phone starts, but you're one of the people, maybe my phone starts buzzing. But to have that, I mean, for him to say heartfelt, and he was very touched personally because he's a Brooklyn guy. And what was happening.
And he said when no one else was yet able to go out, that truck was going over rivers and puddles and getting,
dodging trees and everything else. And
beating people.
You know, and that's very powerful. And I think it's very genuine, some of these stars. We can get kind of jaded. But, mm-hmm, you know, there's been a great sense of our celebrities coming out to lend what power they have. They have the power of recognition and to lend that.
And, of course, we won't talk about the aftermath of that, which is that then that segment of your nonprofit walks around your whole office being like, it was us. And everyone's like, hey, we did stuff too.
Yeah,
I know. Christy Robb was joking about that. Like, oh, we'll never hear the end of that.
Nothing's fair.
Well, very, very interesting. It's very interesting. I wanted to ask this. Do we give more today than we did 20 years ago and 100 years ago? I mean, does anyone know the answer? I wonder in the 60s, in the 20s.
I mean, it'd have to be a percent. I don't know a percentage argument. I obviously would probably give more because we got more. I mean, we're wealthier.
Right, a higher amount, yeah.
And I don't know if it's changed. My guess is probably not, because take hunger, which you almost had licked in the late 70s, early 80s.
It was licked, huh?
Pretty much. We were running about countrywide, about 7%, 8% of people were suffering from hunger, as opposed to the 49 million we have now. And that was really a political, President Johnson's war on poverty that came out of. And then with the huge Reagan cuts, you know, we've talked about before how the increase in the kind of private response had to happen because of the government cuts. So I'm wondering, and nonprofits, though, are big, we're not as huge percentage of kind of the GDP. And so we have resources and very efficient resources, but nowhere near the kind of money that can be leveraged. So I would say it's probably, it may even have dwindled. I don't know, because traditionally a lot of stuff came out of religious groups and that kind of world, which is changing. Unless people are kind of actively see themselves identified with a religious community, so those mechanisms don't have the resources they used to have. But it'd be an interesting thing. We should Google this during the commercial or something.
Yeah. Well, that brings up one of the other
things.
Maybe
Jack can do it while Aaron's talking.
I was thinking about, with regards to the difference between Katrina and Sandy, but then also giving today, is the rise of kind of technology and social media, yep, and how that has impacted, yeah, mm-hmm, you know, these ideas of many people giving small amounts versus, you know, a small group giving large amounts, mm-hmm, that you can text your gifts, you can tweet, you can Facebook, yep, and those were like major communication lines, but also major and new, I think, funding tools. I'm curious, you know, if you've seen that kind of become more important in your organization.
Or the opposite, where people say, I liked it, so right, I helped it.
Yeah, I know, that's the thing. It has become more important. I don't think no one's figured out how to quite leverage this as well as we'd like to. I mean, no one's figured out how to leverage Facebook, mm-hmm, in terms of the money that it should represent. Even I don't think advertisers have figured that out either. But it has been, and it's a mixture of what you're both talking about, the liking. It's a mixture of getting the message out and having some conversation about it and kind of publicizing it, and also trying to get some monies in. So it's useful, and it's one of those things. It's what we are now. It's exactly what we are. That's we Twitter and Facebook and the like.
Very interesting. Well, I want to hear about your two nonprofits and how our listeners can give, because this is going to be playing for the next few days on the live stream and be at the tippity top of the archive. So, we'll start with you, Aaron. What will people give? And what should people give? And then what would that money go towards?
Sure.
And how to give. I mean, website and all that.
Yeah. I think the best way to give is by visiting the Heritage Radio Network website, which is www.heritageradionetwork.org. You can click on the donate button and choose to become a member there. We have a couple different tiers of membership. All tiers are great. Membership is super beneficial to us for two reasons. One, because it does provide some funding, some sort of a funding stream, but also by adding your kind of name to the membership tolls, you're showing kind of your belief and support in the organization, and that's a very powerful number that we can then turn to people and say, you know, hey, it's not just us at the radio, it's us and our 500 members, our 1,000 members, our 2,000 members that stand behind us. And the money goes to fund kind of basic operational costs, but then in the new year, we're really looking at tackling some new issues for the station. In particular, we are looking at, you know, what role media and radio in particular can play in impacting health outcomes for those affected by obesity and diabetes. You know, what are the tools that we can think about here to develop that communities can use, or what is our role as a station? We really want to tuck into that, in addition to kind of continuing our work supporting the next generation of farmers. There's a lot of kind of interesting and important advocacy work to be done around fracking issues here in the New York State.
Climate change was a board conversation, yeah. I remember. That's a big issue that you know, has a myriad of tentacles, and almost everything is part of it. And it remains still an issue that's hard to grasp for many Americans. I mean, Al Gore and people like that have been preaching it, but what do you really do? What does it really mean? So that'll be a little part of the station, right?
I think that's going to be a big part. And the thing about climate change is it touches kind of all aspects of the food system, whether it's food production and consumption to the way we handle our food waste, and how we're going to, the importance of building strong relationships between rural and urban environments. And I think our role on radio is really to provide kind of substantive conversations and information around these issues so that people aren't being we don't want to be the Fox News or the kind of fear mongers of these conversations. We want to provide you with kind of real, thoughtful information that allows you as an individual to make a choice that's in line with the world you want to see. And I think that is what we really see as our role to play.
And last question, does the $60 membership, I actually don't know the answer to this, stop you from getting bigger donations from people, you think? I mean, that's an interesting, because by becoming a membership organization, you essentially said it would be breadth that would lead you towards financial security versus just a few individuals. But I just wonder if people would give you 500, but they're like, oh, I'll just give them 60. That's what they want.
I think that's a strategic question that as an organization, I think quite honestly don't totally know the answer to. I mean, I think for me personally, I believe in, you know, the voices of the many versus the voices of the few. I think we want that engagement and feedback from as broad of an audience as possible. So we want to make sure it's accessible to everyone. And we wanted to create entry points to the organization. Maybe you've just heard about us, you like what we're doing, and that small membership allows us to kind of continue to have a conversation with you and develop that relationship over time, so that maybe the next go round that giving would be increased. Or not. I mean, I guess it's a good problem to have.
It is.
And I'm happy to kind of continue to think about it and tackle it. But to me, it was really important to be as accessible as possible to as many people as possible.
I think you're 100% right. And I would just like to commend radio, because it was interesting during this whole Sandy madness that radio was one of the things that kept working, that people got information out of there. You know, we had millions of folks without power, but the radios and stuff got the information out and kept people connected. And people think it's such an old school technology. Mm-hmm. And it really is one of the most powerful and one of the few places, apropos of your Fox News analogy, where one has and can hear sensible discussions from disparate people.
Mm-hmm. By the way, that was a big thing. Carlo Petrini gave one of his first quote-unquote slow food awards, which you could liken to a Nobel Prize, to these, I think, Central American farming groups that kept radio going, whether it was to speak about a storm or people talking about merchants that were trying to overcharge them for feed. So very powerful medium that could not get taken away.
Right. No, it's, you can set up a radio station in a restaurant.
Yes.
It's great to have the opportunity to talk about Bread and Life.
just to give the pitch, folks can support Bread and Life at www.breadandlife.org, and A-N-D spelled out, and it's B-R-E-A-D-A-N-D-L-A-F-E.org. And the need will continue. The need will continue throughout the year. We, as I've alluded to, we're going to do about 750,000 meals this year. With our free tax program, we will help people get approximately $4 million in tax returns that they might not have been able to get prior to that, provide medical services for thousands, immigration services for thousands, and help people get what they need to get back on their feet or not fall further. And I think that that's so important. As I'd mentioned earlier, one in five New Yorkers needs emergency food because of the disparity of income in this town and the kind of inability to get what they need. I'm reminded of a quote, which I think is so great when I do fundraising, because fundraising is a pain in the neck sometimes. It's hard to ask for money. Folks don't like to do it. And Aaron and I were laughing at each other, but that's what you do. You have to ask for money. And one of the great things about asking for money is what Pete Hamill said about New York City. He says, New York City is the place you come to meet different people, people different than you. And to be able to have that conversation, that economic conversation, that value-based conversation around what's important to people and have them invest. And that's why I encourage people to invest in nonprofits, to support the radio station here, to support Heritage Radio, to support Bread and Life, because we are that. We are that coming together of disparate group of people to address, attack, and work to solve a social problem that affects us all, not just those who need food, not just those who are interested and kind of where your food comes from, but know that food is one of the essential things to us. And it's the essential thing not just to provide us nutrition and keep us from dying, but it's that thing that comes together. We're already planning, a lot of us here and a lot of us listening will be planning our Christmas meals mm-hmm. and thinking about how we're going to get people together and who likes what, and Aunt Sally won't eat this, and who likes this kind of wine. But it's all about making us come together. And an ideal Christmas, my ideal Christmas, is when I get a whole bunch of people together and they're arguing and laughing and carrying on, and we create something that's different, mm-hmm. that's greater than the sum of our parts. And I think that's what nonprofits do. Bread and Life brings together. We last year did about 24,000 volunteers who came and helped us on various things, serving tens of thousands of people. We bring people together to make that small little entity in Bed-Stuy, a small $3 million entity, greater than the sum of its parts, and to serve. And I think that's what radio does, too. It takes three of us here who are speaking to, I don't know what your listenership is, but speaking to...
3 million.
3 million. Are you making things up?
Yeah. No, but, well, we, but she'll
sum,
tell you. She'll
but the,
tell
but the sum of our parts, that folks out there are taking what we're saying, either shutting us off, saying that's great, I don't agree, whatnot, mm-hmm. and hopefully saying that it is great, and clicking on the link for Heritage Radio and clicking on the link for Bread and Life and giving mm-hmm. to support those. But we are creating something that's greater than the sum of our parts. We are coming together and talking to and arguing with and meeting people who are different than us.
Oh, that's a great point. Increasing the reach, and I love the people that work with you. A lot of them strike me as being from the local community.
They are.
They're driving their motorcycles through the lobby so that they can pose Santa Claus next to the motorcycles.
We had Santa with his chopper yesterday, and today we'll have that again.
And all the security guards, oh, you can't walk. Oh, wait, let him walk here. And there's just a great exchange. There's great energy. You have how many people do you employ?
We employ right now 28.
28.
And of those, all but two live in Brooklyn.
Oh, fantastic. And Aaron, how many listeners are on the Heritage Radio Network on any given month? Give us your busiest month. Give us a nod.
Busiest month, the website's seen about 2.5 million visits. Wow. And then unique visitors, just people who are brand new, have never visited before. That number just keeps going up and up and up. So we had about 65,000 this last month.
Great.
And okay. That has doubled a few times this past year. So we're super thrilled by that. And quite frankly, expect it to continue as we continue to have great programs like yours, Patrick, on the main course.
Thanks. I keep waiting for to get pissed off because Jack and Aaron call me in for this is how you can make your show better. but listen, I need it. I need it. My show is definitely
it's
in the lower tier.
One of the top 27 shows on the network.
Oh, Jack, thank you. Well, Jack is our crack research team. Actually, the best probably in the country in terms of number of keys he can type per second. But in answer to our question, total giving in billions of dollars, even when you inflation-adjusted dollars, it's gone way up.
Oh, good.
Since 1970, you're about $120 billion. And in 2010, you're about $350 billion.
Wow.
But I'm sure there was a lot of giving back then that was hard to track.
No, but that's encouraging. That's like I said, like we both said, we weren't sure. And that's a very, it's a very pretty graph. Yeah. Listeners should know this graph is in red and green for Christmas, too. Yes. So very good, Jack.
And your tax dollars, your nonprofit dollars have gone for a color printer at the office. Now, couldn't you have gone black and white, Aaron? No, but
it was a donated printer.
Well, I wish everybody an amazing holidays. Thank you so much, Tony, for all your support and coming on the station. And, for all that you do. It is very, very inspiring. And Aaron and Jack, congratulations on your guys' success. And I wish you 10 times the membership in 2013, because you absolutely deserve it.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks, Patrick. Thanks for having us.
All right. Thanks to Anne. And we will be back first thing 2013 with 27 new shows.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.